Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We have wonderful fans here, and it's something that they deserve is for us to be able to build a team that can compete, hopefully, with the things that we can predict and a little luck along the way. We have a lot of work to do, but in a very competitive Western Conference that we're ready to see if we can make our mark.
And indeed he has. That's Justin Zanuck, an interview with KSL News Radio in Utah back in August. The Jazz have gotten a very competitive and interesting team. And yesterday, Justin Zanuck interviewed via video feed for this new top job of the Chicago Bulls. Here to tell us all about this candidate is Eric Walden, who covers the Jazz for the Salt Lake Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at TribJazz. He's with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm excellent today. How are you doing?
Good. When we mentioned the name Justin Zanuck, what's top of mind for him? What recommends him as potentially the top man for a heritage NBA franchise?
Well, this is something that he's been, he's an ambitious guy. This is something he's been wanting to do for really most of the time that he's spent as a front office executive. He's highly regarded enough that after he had left the Jazz to pursue a job with the Milwaukee Bucks a few years ago, he was hired by them as their assistant GM and was considered their GM in waiting. And then when they had the ownership shakeup a few years ago, that kind of went south for him. He wasn't forced out, but he was basically kind of in no man's land. And the Jazz GM, Dennis Lindsay at the time, thought enough of him to basically go back to him. He had not filled Justin Zanuck's position since he had left. Dennis is known for being very methodical, very kind of picky in who he chooses to work with. And he figured that he would, get around to filling that position and just never found someone he liked. So when Justin became available again, Dennis went right back to him and said, hey, do you want to come back? The trust between those guys is amazing. Dennis Lindsay is the executive vice president of basketball operations here, following kind of a front office, not a shakeup, but a series of promotions last May that resulted in Justin Zanuck being promoted from assistant GM to the full GM. But those two, along with assistant GM David Morway, who you'll recall is the former general manager of the Indiana Pacers, it's kind of a three-headed monster out here where while Dennis Lindsay has the final say, they really are kind of collaborative in the decisions that the front office makes in terms of personnel moves. So he's been considered a guy who's been on the way up. He's been a finalist for the 76ers job before. Again, at one point he was thought highly enough of to be, the next guy to lead the Milwaukee Bucks. So he's really just a very kind of cerebral, informed guy.
What would his managerial style be? Is he a consensus builder? Is he a team of rivals type guy who just wants to hear stuff he doesn't want to hear and work outward? Everybody has a different way of doing it. I know in his background with, you know, player agency side of things, that there can be, is sometimes it's a little warmer than maybe an, you know, industry executive might be. What's his business personality?
Yeah, it's very much kind of a consensus builder. That's been kind of the format here in Utah, and Dennis Lindsay wouldn't have hired him initially, let alone brought him back, if that weren't the case. Like I said, you know, it's very much kind of a three-headed monster in terms of, you know, deciding which players to pursue in free agency, which players to go after in the draft, in terms of, you know, who they're going to target in trades. Yeah, very much kind of a work with guys. And as you mentioned, his history as an agent, he started off, you know, his first job was working for Mark Bartlestein with, you know, he worked for Mark Bartlestein. He moved on to under Priority Sports. He moved on to ASM Sports. That background made him appealing to Dennis Lindsay here in Utah because, yeah, very much kind of a negotiator type, very much kind of a let's make this work for both sides type.
It's funny because Mark, his, you know, Chicago-based longtime NBA power agent, his name actually came up as a possibility for being that guy, and he's been on these airwaves talking about that and kind of laughing at it a little bit because obviously he has his business is in a position where I think the last thing he might want to do is actually have the trials and tribulations of running an NBA team himself. But to me, the issue is whoever takes this job, will he be a strong enough presence, have enough gravity to be able to deflect from whatever remaining John Paxson presence there is? He's still going to be around by all reports that John Paxson, the current executive vice president, would still be this sort of Svengali, I don't know, this sort of this shadowy advisor to the Reinsdorfs. And we know in pro sports how those situations can go. Ask Theo Epstein about the presence of Larry Lucchino with the Boston Red Sox. And my hope would be Justin Zanuck is the type of person to say, John, when I want your opinion, I'll ask for it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, talk about kind of an awkward situation, but just knowing Justin, the little bit I do, this is my second season, or this was my second season, I guess, however we want to phrase it, covering the team. So I got to know him a little bit. And while he can kind of sometimes come off as quiet, there are other times where, you know, when he's forceful, he needs to be. He makes his point. He gets it across without, you know, being overly kind of histrionic about it. He's got this very kind of calm, cool, collected, focused demeanor about him. So I expect that were he to get that job in Chicago, that probably would not be an issue. He's not shy about making his feelings known. He just does it in kind of a very smooth and you know, a very smooth fashion. He's very kind of an unruffled personality, I guess you could say.
Is he well connected enough to be ready to start hiring people when he walks in that door? Like, does he now, and I'm sure this is one of the questions that comes up in these interviews, his shortlist, when it says, look, you are going to have carte blanche to have your scouting director, your director of pro personnel, however you want to structure this thing. Do you think that's plug and play, that he's known for a while, were he in charge of an organization, who would be coming with him?
I believe that's probably the case. I mean, as we discussed previously, he went to Milwaukee back in 2016 with the idea being that he would succeed John Hammond there, you know, so it's like he's had this ambition in mind for years now. Obviously, it didn't work out when they had the new ownership situation there. Hammond moved on to Orlando. Justin was actually promoted to interim GM for about 3 weeks while the team, you know, conducted a search and ultimately kind of shocked the basketball universe by promoting John Horst. But But this is something that, yes, he's had in his mind for years. You know, he's had several seasons to kind of build his team, as it were. And frankly, one of the reasons that Dennis Lindsay brought him back is just that he is incredibly well-connected. His time as an agent gave him access to people all over the league. You know, he was an agent for 15 years before he was doing this. He's considered extremely well-connected in international markets. So I would imagine, you know, he knows a lot of scouts in Europe, in Asia, that could help contribute to the process. So, yeah, that's considered one of his strengths.
So many of the guys in these positions actually came up more on the scouting side, that in their heart of hearts, they're basketball guys. You know, they're in gyms. They talk to coaches. They need to be in and around the game because that's just sort of the milieu in which they made their bones. That doesn't seem to apply to Zanuck in that way. He doesn't seem to be cut from that sort of scout's cloth. Is that something he's learned along the way? Does he defer more to scouts in that regard, or has he developed a keener basketball sense over time?
He has developed a little bit of that, but I would say that has been an area where they have deferred a little bit. You know, just given that they do have kind of the three-headed monster here in Salt Lake, you know, these guys are constantly going around checking out games, but they do leave a lot of that to more of the player personnel side of things in the front office. So that's not an ultimate strength of his, although I would say that's probably something that he's picked up on a little bit as the years have gone by.
I spent a lot of time around Quinn Snyder. We overlapped at Duke. We were on the same minor league basketball team together. He was the point guard when I was broadcasting Raleigh Bullfrogs basketball, and when he broke his hand, actually sat in and did some broadcasting with me. And I've always really admired Quinn's energy and intellect, and he's come a long way to become a really creative and open-minded and communicative NBA head coach. How does his inform the traits that would probably be valued in whoever replaces Jim Boylan as Bulls head coach?
I'm sorry, you cut out there for a second. What was the question?
Wondering how Quinn Snyder's obvious strengths would inform Justin Zanuck's decision on how the next Bulls coach is hired.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So really the thing that this organization loved about Quinn Snyder at the time they hired him and continue to love most about him now is just he's regarded as a basketball savant. You know, he's regarded as just incredibly detailed. And this is what the Jazz players tell you on a consistent basis. They never feel like they go into a situation unprepared. You know, Quinn has thought of plan A, B, C, D, E on down the line. He's just that's really the thing that this organization loves about him, and that I would imagine that Justin would be looking for in a head coach, someone who is incredibly basketball knowledgeable in terms of X's and O's, but who at the same time is relatable to players. I mean, these guys would go through a brick wall for Quinn Snyder because they know he's got their back. They know he's going to put them in optimal situations to succeed. They know they're not going to go into a game not knowing what they should do. You know, whenever they lose a game, whenever they've gone through rough passes, which they have this year, it's been kind of an up and down season. You know, they never come out saying, well, we just didn't know what we were supposed to be doing in a certain situation. No, they're always saying we knew exactly what we needed to do and we just didn't execute it the way that was necessary. So, yeah, I would imagine that Justin would be looking for someone who's just got incredible X's and O's knowledge and who can have the team prepared without question.
talking with Eric Walden of the Salt Lake Tribune, who covers the Utah Jazz, and we're talking about the Bulls front office candidate, Justin Zanuck, who is currently the Utah Jazz general manager. It's, you know, we mentioned Jim Boylan, and actually now that I think about it, it was Gordon Monson's column in your newspaper that predicted everything that was going to happen with Jim Boylan, the head coach. And this was after Boylan's ill-fated stint coaching Utah, when everybody sort of transferred away and said, you know, help me get away from this guy, this one-trick pony. I read that column, most of it, on the air, Eric, and compared it to the famous letters that Charles de Gaulle sent John F. Kennedy about occupying Vietnam, saying, this is what's going to happen. This is how it goes. Don't make these mistakes. This is what your experience is going to be. And I'll be damned if you didn't check every single box from that Salt Lake Tribune column about the Jim Boylan Bulls experience. It's really quite remarkable.
Yeah. I'll just leave it at this. When the Bulls made Jim Boylan their head coach, there were a lot of eyebrows raised in Salt Lake City. You know, it's just, clearly, the guy's a basketball lifer. You know, you don't get to that position without knowing certain things. But, his experience here at the University of Utah obviously left quite a bit to be desired. And, yeah, I mean, I hate to hear you compare, you know, I know joking, but comparing Gordon to Charles de Gaulle, that's just going to make his head incredibly big. Let's hope he doesn't catch wind of this. He doesn't need that. But, as you mentioned, the Jim Boylan experience was sadly just entirely too predictable, because that guy just seems incapable of kind of changing, you know, of adapting to what he needs to be in this modern NBA.
Eric, really appreciate the time and the information. All very solid stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
That is Eric Walden of the Salt Lake Tribune, who covers the Jazz. That's what you need to know about Justin Zanuck, who might end up being the Bulls' new executive vice president. I want to get into the idea of that title, ranked by the fact that they're keeping it at that title, that makes it sound like less than it probably should be. And maybe it is. Maybe it has ended up a little less than that, because it sounds like, when I read what Joe Cowley wrote, the names who are unavailable, it's starting to tell us a lot about what this position may be. Also, when we come back, I want you to hear from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. He talked to Ernie Johnson on NBA Twitter about the NBA's plans and what might be reasonable for them. It's been a whirlwind of a morning. If you're just joining us on Sports Radio 670, we all woke up to this big Jeff Passan report about MLB floating this idea of coming back next month and sequestering everybody in hotels around the Phoenix area. And then we all said, basically, what is wrong with you? And what the hell are you doing? And this is insane and completely reprehensible to think about doing something like this, and it's not going to work anyway. And then shortly thereafter, MLB sent out a statement saying, we're not really doing anything yet. We're just talking about stuff. But right now we're talking basketball, and I'm talking to you. 312-644-6767. Want your feedback as well as we get into a little bit of Bulls stuff. Midday Midway coming your way at 1040. Steve Lyons, he's been so nice to reschedule when we've had things actually happening that have forced rescheduling. He's going to talk some baseball with us. We're going to play Who Am I at 11:20, and then we're going to do our new version of Transition, where we have a conversation at the end of the show with another Score host, to just keep those connections going in a way that we enjoy and hope you do too. David Haw is going to be that guy today. Keep it here. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the Score. Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score, here on this sunny and warm Tuesday morning. And even though the weather is gorgeous, and even though it is instinctive, especially since we've been so cooped up and so isolated, to want to gather, to want to go and have a barbecue with people, please, please, please fight that instinct. And being outside is fine. If you want to take a walk with your kids, if you want to go walk up and down the street, get a breath of fresh air, that's fine. but do not congregate. Keep socially distant. It's critically important, even though we feel so strongly. And I get you. I understand that you want to do this. It's spring, and now we can all run around. Just make sure you're doing what you're doing, because we are doing a good job. And initial signs are indicating that Chicago, for the most part, is doing better than some other places out there when it comes to how social distancing is being mapped and being measured. And so far, so good. Keep doing it. Keep those streets clear. Steer clear of people. Keep wearing your masks. Keep washing your hands. Keep sanitizing high-touch surfaces. Don't touch your face. Do everything that you're doing. Don't lose sight of it, because I know over time that initial panic starts to wear down a little bit. That's when you let your guard down, and that's when bad things can happen. So obviously celebrate a little bit of spring. Celebrate some good weather. Maybe, you know, get some fresh air in your house, hang out in your backyard, maybe take a walk, but avoid the temptation to try to party with other people or gather. You know, no play dates for your kids, no crawling around the slide and the swings and the merry-go-round at the park. So make sure you don't do that. This is from Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. The headline, Bulls Front Office Restructuring Already Has More Misses Than Hits. And this is under the category of we don't deserve nice things. You know, after yesterday, we have that terrific conversation with Dan Robson talking about Bobby Webster and just what a fabulous candidate that guy would be to be a Theo Epstein type taking over the organization and coming in there and just changing the culture of everything. No, not so much. Apparently, as Cowley writes, according to Toronto media, Raptors general manager Bobby Webster is close to landing a new deal to keep his current role. Meanwhile, the other guy who was at the top of my list, Adam Simon, who is the Heat's VP of basketball operations and assistant general manager, is also staying put. He's been with the team for decades, starting as their video coordinator. And this, Cowley, the Simon news was the bigger blow because Bulls chief operating officer Michael Reinsdorf reportedly has had his eye on the Heat's operating model. So the poaching Simon would have been the best way for the Bulls to go, giving them instant credibility as they restructure the front office. And we know that Chad Buchanan, that was the Pacers GM, he opted to stay in Indiana. They interviewed Zanuck yesterday. They are scheduled to interview Nuggets GM Arturis Karnisovas. That's more of a scouting side guy rather than a cap side, player contract side guy. And I'm very curious how they handle the title here, because right now we know John Paxson is Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations. He reportedly did not participate in the interview of Zanuck. That's great, since he's chosen to move to the background. Expected to retain what is called a key role with the Bulls, acting as a sounding board and advisor to the Reinsdorfs. I don't know why this is necessarily the case. I don't know how this is expected to work, and I don't know what that fact is going to do or has done to the desire of other people to come and take this job. I think it would be critical that this new person be president of basketball operations, to have that title, to be in a position that hasn't existed before and given that powerful title rather than just executive vice president. However they want to restructure it, they can. If you want to do it the way the Cubs have done it, where you have a president of business operations and a president of basketball operations, I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. But it's time for that. And as I mentioned yesterday, if the Blackhawks can do it, the Bulls can do it. I keep saying that to myself as sort of a mantra of self-help. I mentioned also that Adam Silver had been in some public conversation regarding the future of the league, future of the NBA. I want to get your thoughts on what the Bulls are doing and these names that remain in their search and what to make of this search. 312-644-6767 is our number if you want to jump in. And also, if you just feel you need to talk about something, anything, you know, if you are lonely or you feel disconnected and you just feel like you need a little bit of interaction for your own mental health, that's one thing that the Score is committed to doing for you in these times as we remain live and local. Let's get to what Adam Silver said, because we talked all morning about baseball and what baseball thinks it can do or maybe should do. Adam Silver is nothing if not incredibly intelligent and very, very reasonable. So listen closely to what he said in these extended comments with Ernie Johnson on NBA Twitter.
When we initially shut down, we were calling it a hiatus or a pause. There was a notion of 30 days because there wasn't any of the widespread view that at that point that our country would in essence be entirely shut down over the next several weeks. And so the fact is now sitting here today, I know less in a way than I did then.
Wow.
I think in some ways, just as I listen to the public health experts and the people that are advising us, the virus is potentially moving faster than maybe we had thought at that point, and that it therefore may peak earlier. What that means in terms of our ability to come back at some point in late spring or summer is still unknown to me. And essentially what I've told my folks over the last week is that we should just accept that at least for the month of April, we won't be in a position to make any decisions. I don't think that necessarily means on May 1st we will be, but at least I know, I think just to settle everyone down a little bit, it doesn't mean that internally, both the league and in discussions with our players and the teams, we aren't looking at many different scenarios for restarting the season. But I think it honestly is just too early, given what's happening right now, to be even able to predict where we'll be in a few weeks.
Is there any kind of, and again, understanding that to try to, you know, build a timeline or anything like that is kind of difficult, but is there a date where you're saying, look, if it goes to this, then we can't finish the regular season. We will just go to the playoffs. Or have you made a decision right now that if it resumes, we'll just pick it up? Are you trying to finish the regular season?
Honestly, we haven't made any decisions. I mean, in a perfect world, yes, we would try to finish the regular season in some form and then move on to the playoffs. But what I've learned, I think initially, sort of the first week, first 2 weeks, we were looking at more specific scenarios in terms of if we start this date, what will that mean for the regular season? When would the playoffs begin? When would they conclude? And again, what I've learned over the last few weeks is that we just have too little information to make those sort of projections. Sorry. I will say, though, that as I look out into the summer, there does come a point at which we would start impacting next season. Now, even there, I think a few weeks ago, nobody thought we were talking about even a potential impact on next season, independent of what we might choose to do to finish our regular season and playoffs. Again, I think now, because so little is known, you know, we're here, we're ready to go. I mean, I don't want to leave the suggestion in with anybody that we're not doing everything we possibly can to restart under the right circumstances. But of course, player safety and the health of everyone in the NBA family has to come first. I mean, that may mean that there's a scenario in which we can play without fans. I mean, that's something we looked a lot at. In fact, I think the Warriors were scheduled to play the first fanless game before we were shut down. So we were looking at that possibility and we're thinking about what that might mean. How would those games be televised? Would we still play in huge NBA arenas or would we go to practice facilities? Would we go to a single site? I mean, there's been a lot of conjecture about various cities and places that might hold a tournament. Again, we're in listening mode right now. We've been contacted by many of those jurisdictions to ask what our level of interest is. And we've talked to them about what their capabilities are. But once again, it's just there's too much unknown right now.
Now, that is so reasonable. I get back to what's so hard about that. What's so hard about saying, I don't know, we don't know. And maybe he doesn't feel the same desire to force the league out front with some of these content possibilities. Maybe baseball wanted to be talked about in that way to get people thinking about baseball. I don't know overall what the value is, but it's so important to hear people in power, regardless of what's being said to them by others, regardless of how they're being strong-armed by people who are only worried about their own appearances and public relations, that we don't know. None of us know. The doctors don't know. All they can do is gather the best data possible every day and be guided by the science and be guided by the medicine. And everything else is secondary, all of it. And that's on in any walk of life, anything that we're doing on the micro, on the macro. We have to trust the people who went to medical school. We have to trust the people who have spent their lives studying these viruses and studying how they transmit and how history and best practices and, frankly, mistakes can inform what we do and how we do it. And then and only then will our sports leagues be able to come up with some kind of plan for what is safe and proper for getting games back and getting everybody back together. And I don't want to sound alarmist, and I don't think I am, because there have been some green shoots out there. There have been, if we look at what has happened recently in Europe with the number of new cases on the decline, finally, with what has gone on in Asia, with the way things have been controlled in Singapore and Japan and South Korea, that there is an end to this, but we can't make it come faster other than by doing what we're doing, and at least in Chicago, doing fairly relatively well right now and continuing to wait. Look, Japan screwed up with their baseball. They tried, and they thought that they could accelerate the return of baseball. And there was a story in, I think it was the Cincinnati Inquirer, yeah. And it's the headline is, as Japan delays baseball season again, it serves as a cautionary tale for MLB. Japan's top pro baseball league planned to begin its season on April 24th. They returned to play in exhibition games without fans. It appeared the country was containing the spread to minimal numbers. Then three players from the same team, the Hanshin Tigers, tested positive for COVID-19, and the team suspended practice for nearly a week. They disinfected the stadium. They instructed all the players and staff to self-quarantine. And then Japanese baseball commissioner Atsushi Saito announced on Friday, this is an AP story, that he was postponing the start of the season. So he said, unfortunately, things are getting worse now, so they're prepared for an extension of the postponement. They tried. So as optimistic as MLB can be, with all these various options on the table and your whole Arizona bubble idea, whatever you want to do, the virus doesn't care. It doesn't care about your plans. It doesn't care about your business. It doesn't care who you are. It doesn't have any feelings. It just is. It's just looking for the next host to infect so it can propagate itself. That's all. And I think we have this natural Americanness, this sense of fight through it and be defiant and show our fighting spirit. That's great in a war. That's great when you have an enemy that can maybe be deterred by or intimidated by your resilience. This thing doesn't care. This is not. It's not people. It doesn't think. There is no defying it. You can't stick your thumb in the eye of a virus and say you won't keep us down, because it's not listening. All you can do is look at the data, try to keep people safe, get equipment to people, take care of people, and be selfless in the way we conduct our business every day. It's all we can do. Well, we can also do the Midday Midway. That is coming up next. I've been continually amazed by how quickly there have been effects on our world in nature and elsewhere just by the systemic shutting down of things. We also have a comeuppance for somebody in Tampa who is a genuine bad actor who now finally has been put under control, not by his willfully ignorant government as much as they pretended to try, but by forces beyond his control. We also have the stats on what this quarantining and what the isolation is doing to us as a people. And it's kind of not good. So it gives us a playbook for what we may have to be pushing back against. The Midday Midway is next. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.
the first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on the Score.
We've reached the Midday Midway portion of the show today. We started off with the first hour talking about the trial balloon floated by MLB that was reported by Jeff Passan overnight, and we wake up to this idea of a frankly crazy, irresponsible, and untenable plan to convene a version of MLB with all 30 teams sequestered in hotels across the Phoenix area and trying to have expanded rosters in case guys test positive for COVID-19. And it was ridiculous from the start. We noted how ridiculous it was, even though it was enticing and hopeful to think of the idea of baseball coming back. And then baseball came out with a statement like, we're not really doing that. We'll let you know when we're close to doing something. So they walked it back after having allowed Jeff Passan to have all the information on it to float it for them. And they put their finger to the wind and got the answer they probably didn't want. But it's the right one, and it's the right answer for public health. And that is a resounding no. Bruce Levine joined us to talk about it. We also talked about the Bulls and their search for a new top executive. Justin Zanuck interviewed via video yesterday, and Eric Walden, who covers the Jazz for the Salt Lake Tribune, talked about that. We also heard the very reasonable commentary from as smart a commissioner as is out there, and Adam Silver of the NBA. He talked to Ernie Johnson, and it's okay to say you don't know, because that's the truth. You see the picture of the coyote that was loping down Michigan Avenue? I initially thought it was Photoshop, but apparently it's real enough. And not that surprising, because we know that coyotes are all over the city, but to see that happening on an empty street is just amazing. And we talk about, as we have receded from the streets and our places of business and remained in our homes, that nature is nature on you. There have been reports in northern areas of moose wandering around like they do in Alaska. Maybe some curious black bears have been headed in for some enticing smells and garbage cans, etc. And now, in Grand Rapids, there is video of not one, not two, but a literal herd of 20 white-tailed deer running through a residential neighborhood, literally in the middle of the street in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the south side of Grand Rapids. And you can just do a search for it and see the video. It's remarkable. We've all seen it. We've all seen a couple of deer here and there in the city or the suburbs or wherever. We've seen a flock of wild turkeys in a farmland in Wisconsin. But in the middle of a residential area, to see 20 deer running down the middle of the street is really quite something. There's also been some reports, and this is somewhat encouraging, and I think in big picture something to think about, that not only did we have the water quality improving in highly trafficked areas enough to allow for regular appearances of dolphins moving into areas that they wouldn't otherwise. We saw how clear even the Venice canals were, where you could see fish in there. Air quality is improving noticeably. It's the speed at which air quality is improving that really gives you some hope. That I think there are some who thought that this whole thing was going to be irreparable. The news that maybe some scientists are getting and being able to gather valuable data for when our world resumes and when commerce and industry resume, how we might be better informed to keep everything a little bit cleaner. So there is some really valuable and intriguing and hopeful data perhaps being gathered. The other thing is, I saw seismographs are registering that the earth is shaking less, that there is a cumulative effect on all of the movement of things and people and railroads and trucks and all that's going on, and that the various points that report seismic activity say that we have settled things down a bit, which I found fascinating. This is from Patheos.com, and it said, nothing and no one could make Pastor Rodney Howard Brown listen to reason. Tampa officials have been pleading with him to close his church, and he ignored them. News outlets and social media users held him up as a prime example of religious irresponsibility, and he shrugged. The sheriff's office threatened his arrest, and then made good on that warning, and Brown still vowed he'd keep gathering the flock at his Tampa Bay temple. But suddenly, the pig-headed pastor has had a change of heart. Alerted to news reports of his dangerous and possibly costly intransigence, the church's insurance company canceled his policy. And Brown finally bowed his head and announced he would close the place down for now. Of course, he's saying it's the result of relentless religious persecution and government tyranny. But his lawyer actually did admit in a video interview, he let it slip, that he said this pastor's been defamed, he's been put at risk, painted a target on his back, ultimately resulting in death threats, even the cancellation of insurance by the insurance carrier. This has got to stop. Oh, yes, counselor, it's going to stop. And it's going to stop because the insurance was canceled. And this is a good note here. So if Brown's belief in God's providence is genuine, why does he worry about insurance? It's an interesting question. And the number of people gathering religious groups in Louisiana continues to be insane and terrifying. But there will be, that's why I mentioned, there will be a reckoning to come in the American South that is going to be ugly and terribly, terribly unfortunate based on this kind of pigheadedness. All right, here's the data on what we're doing, and we'll see how surprised you may be at some of this. And Jay, you might be certainly qualified on multiple levels here. Not that I'm painting with too broad a brush here. The pandemic is going to have a long-lasting effect on the health of the American people, in part due to habits they'll pick up. During the weeks and months, we are forced to stay home. This is from Axios. Give me a percentage guess for the rise in alcohol sales overall in the week ending March 21st, according to tracking data from Nielsen that measures consumer markets also. What do you think the total percentage jump in alcohol sales has been?
65%.
Not a bad guess. 55%. Spirits up 75%, so to speak. Wine up 66%. And beer is up 42%. Online alcohol sales overall up 243%.
Well, see, that's what we did.
Sales,
when we found out we were going to be locked at home, it was, we got to go get all the Prosecco and Aperol we can find. Because we don't know how long it's going to be till we can leave.
And early on, my wife joked, she put something out there on social media. It's like, I'm going to be stuck in the house with the kids, you better get the tequila. So as a joke, on the way home, I picked up a bottle of tequila, and I said, here it is, because you may be joking now, but in a while you are not going to be. It says weed sales are soaring in places across the country where buying marijuana is legal, although some businesses have been caught flat-footed by the demand. People are eating more. Consumers relying mostly on non-perishable foods, pasta and canned food, that they're calling it now the COVID-15 or the quarantine 15, like the freshman 15 of the pounds gained. Obviously, and for whatever reason, comfort food has been the thing. Macaroni and cheese is in short supply, whether it is Stouffer's, whether it's Kraft, any iteration of macaroni and cheese has been in demand.
It's dirt cheap and everybody loves it. And I always said the freshman 15 was more about boredom than anything. That's exactly what's happening here. People are bored, so they're eating.
No, freshman 15 for us was access. It was the fact that and the abstraction of cost when they made it on your card and called it food points. When it was just points instead of, money. And there were always just magically more points. that would replenish on your card because they just sort of did from wherever. And we could also buy beer with points until they changed that rule. Yeah, they
that would have been bad. Be dead.
Yep, that was they kind of figured out it was not in the best interest of the Duke student community to have beer available on points for a while. But that was freshman 50. It was access, it was beer, and it was the abstraction of it to points. So the macaroni and cheese thing too. I noticed my kids, I don't know about Addie, but my kids have also been craving the foods they had when they were younger. Like my daughter said, could we do chicken nuggets and ranch with lima beans like we did when I was three? I said, really? Seriously? And I always used to do, we did like tricolor rotini and I'd throw broccoli in there and then microwave some frozen meatballs and just do like olive oil and Parmesan cheese. And they loved that. And that was their like little kid favorite dinner. And they asked for that again. So there's been this sort of like reversion to the comfort food womb here for a lot of us.
We're very happy. Addie knows how to cook and bake, and she's already made two homemade from scratch loaves of bread and brownies. Whoa. Just out of boredom. And she usually cooks her own lunch. So she's pretty good. She's probably the best cook in the house.
Yeah, Zoe, I came down yesterday and Zoe was making homemade pancakes for Jason just because she felt like cooking and made him this mm-hmm. big stack of homemade pancakes. It looked pretty good. I might take her up on that as well.
I think a therapist would say that's something that they can control.
And sure.
You know, that sense of control is needed right now.
I think it's control. I also think it's creating something. I think it's taking disparate ingredients and making something, putting something together and complete feels good. Mm-hmm. So the same reason doing a puzzle feels good. I think that's part of it. Now, this is the most important thing. Porn consumption is also up.
Confirmed.
According to the web... it is... yes! The idea of like consumption, porn... I don't know, you consume it, I guess. I guess you consume it, but according to Pornhub, the traffic from the U.S. alone, which is Pornhub's largest market, was up 6.4% as of March 17th. My guess, it's probably higher than that right now. And I also read an article that there is now coronavirus quarantine-themed porn, where it's now about, where the actual, you know, the framing devices for this, it now has to do with being in the house with people, etc. I don't know what that particular turn-on is, but hey, whatever's getting clicks.
As long as it gets rid of the weird, like, stepmother, stepson weird trend that's happening. It's
that
like
a thing?
Every other video. It's from what I hear. Yeah.
Ah, I'll take your word for that's a thing right now. I don't know what the... That must be sort of breaking boundaries in that regard, or the forbidden, or the impossible, you know, all the same psychological reasons for why these things become popular in fantasy. Not to take the fun out of porn. Sorry.
Sorry. You'll never do that.
You know, I apologize for doing that. But yeah, we're getting fat, we're getting drunk, we're getting high, and we're doing too much as hanky to wanky, apparently, is what Axios is telling us right now. But I guess ultimately it'll end up being good for us. I don't know. Because didn't I do the story the other day that actually that particular consumption can be good for boosting your immune system and endorphins and sleep patterns and all that? So if the Midday Midway is to be trusted as the scientific and medical authority as a segment that it is, it's probably ultimately good for you. I'm saying it is, regardless.
I've never felt better.
I can hear it in your tone. And that is the Midday Midway. Coming up, we are going to talk a little bit of baseball. Talk about the possible resumption of the season, and more importantly, talk about the 1986 White Sox with Steve Lyons in our continuing series of conversations about one of the most interesting teams we can remember. He was a part of it. I want to say at mid-season is when Steve Lyons joined that team, but I know he's got baseball thoughts and opinions and stories for us. So he's had to reschedule a couple times. We got him today. Steve Lyons is going to join us for a fun conversation next. Don't go anywhere. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.